We recommend your printing out the daf before the shir, and better yet, even ordering your volume of the Gemara, the Shas Ozer. Gufa, Omar Rav, Ein Machzikin Benichsei Eishes Ish. The word Gufa indicates that what we're learning now was mentioned earlier in the Gemara, and notice the marking, the arrow in the thin margin between the Gemara and the Rashi that points to the arrow before it. You're supposed to align that with the arrow before, where you in fact see the point at which Rav had mentioned this earlier. The halacha states that if a woman is married and she happens to own properties, so one does not gain a chazoka in a married woman's properties. The lady can always claim the reason she was quiet and she didn't issue her protest was because she was relying on her husband. And as we've said many times already in this limud, a chazoka is only so good as the potential for there having been protests. If there would not have been protests, so then a chazoka cannot be formed. The Gemara continues at the top of Nun Aleph Omen Aleph, V'dayone Goyla, Omru Machzikim. Dayone Goyla is an expression referring to Shmuel and another sage whose name was Karna. And their feeling is that she should have been Moche. Omar Rav, Halocha Kedayone Goyla. Very interesting twist here. Rav, who disagreed with the Dayone Goyla, as you notice, Rav and the Dayone Goyla were underlined, trying to draw your attention to those two shitas, and you can see that they were in disagreement, yet Rav paskins, he rules like those that disagreed with him. Omru Le, Rav Kahana, V'Rav Asi, Le Rav. These two Rabbonan turned to Rav and asked him, Hodar Bey Mor Mishmaitse, have you retracted from your teaching? Because you had said, Ein Machzikin B'Nichsei Eishes Ish, and you're now ruling like the Dayone Goyla, who said, yes, Machzikin. Omar Lehu, Rav responds, Mistabro Amri Kidirav Yosef. The ruling of Machzikin, like the Dayone Goyla in the Nichsei Eishes Ish, is to be understood in the context of Rav Yosef's teaching. Rav Yosef's teaching, you'll notice, was cited on Nun Amud Beis. There's an asterisk here in our Gemara between the Gemara text and the Tosfos, and you'll find a parallel asterisk on the previous Amud, on Nun Amud Beis, where Rav Yosef had said his din. Rav Yosef was resolving the difficulty posed in the Gemara over there, and he indicated that the idea that Rav had mentioned over there on the previous Amud, that Eishes Ish Tzricha Limchos, was that she has to protest if an outsider is using her properties as opposed to her husband. We can see this in the Rashbam over here, second line from the top, Mistabro Amri, Hecho Dehavya Mixas Chazoka V'chaye Bailo V'sholosh Li'achar Mises Habal Kemo Shapirish Rav Yosef Li'el. The case involved an outsider using the woman's property part of the time while her husband was alive and a complete 3 years after her husband died. This was all part of Rav Yosef's explanation on the previous Amud. Hosam hu de mistabro de machzikin. Under those circumstances, and there is a possibility of forming a chazok in the nichsei eishes ish, and the married woman's properties. The ha Rav gufei, Rav himself, hochi kormo le'el, eishes ish tricho limchos. the mashma de machzikin, that a married woman is expected to protest, which gives us the impression that even Rav has a scenario whereby one can achieve a chazoka in a married woman's property. Just as we explained, the partial in time in front of the husband, and the husband died, and then additional 3 years of use after he died. Umihu, the Rashbam adds, Dayone Gola Bechol Inyan Pligi Adarav. As far as Dayone Gola's personal shita, they disagree with Rav under all circumstances. Even where the husband is alive, the outsider can gain a chazaka. Rav himself, as it appears from the understanding of the Gemara, is paskening like the Dayone Gola, but only insofar as the way Rav Yosef explained it, as we just saw in the Rashbam. Continuing in our Gemara, V'lo li'isha b'nichsei b'ayla. A woman doesn't achieve a chazaka in her husband's properties. The Gemara says, Pshita, kevon de'is lo mezoni, mezoni hu de'ka'och lo. It's an obvious ruling that a woman does not gain a chazaka in her husband's properties. After all, the husband is obligated to provide her with support, mezonos. So her using of the husband's properties was for her mezonos purposes. It's an obligation that he has toward her anyway. So he's not going to protest her using the properties. That's what he's obligated to provide. Lo sricha, the case or the ruling of the Mishnah is necessary under the following circumstances. The yiched lo aro achriti limezona. He, the husband, designated a separate parcel of land for her mezonos purposes, for her support. Even so, if she is found using another piece of property of her husband's, he is not going to protest. He's not going to be makbid if she consumes more than what she needs for her maintenance, for her mezonos allocation. And as a result of the husband not protesting, even though she's consuming more than she really needs, a chazaka cannot be formed. The Gemara continues with a structure that we've seen before. The Gemara makes an inference right now that a chazaka, we said that a woman does not gain in her husband's property. However, let us say she produced a shtar mechira from her husband, namely that her husband sold her property. Can we infer that that would be binding? The Gemara is going to suggest even that maybe should not be binding, that the shtar is not a serious indication of sale from husband to wife. And you'll ask, why shouldn't it be? The answer to that will be what the Gemara terms ligluye zuze. The husband, faked a sale, so to speak, to see if she has money. In other words, he proposed a sale of some land to the wife, wrote up a shtar, and then she would come up with money, pay, and think she's getting the land. But the whole point, the whole goal of the husband was simply to see her pull out money. He wanted to see if she had a stash of cash. So if that was the husband's intent, so he wasn't serious in trying to sell the property to her, so why is it that we have a Mishnah from which we can infer that a raya, a proof of sale, would be binding? This is also featured in our introductory comments on the outside of the Gemara. Notice, nosei klali, a general topic, hamochir sode liishto, one who sells a field to his wife. And then the specific topic at hand, the nosei, we've written in the outside margin, hamochir sode liishtoi, v'kosav lo shtar, v'hi shilmo lo kesef. One who writes a shtar and she pays him cash. Konsa ishto, the woman thereby acquires the field. V'lo amrinon, and we're not going to say that it was a non-serious sale. Rather, we are going to view it as a serious sale. And we won't say ligluye zuze hu deboy, that the husband's intent was simply to reveal a stash of money. He wanted to see if she had something on the side. Now, in the Gemara text, we begin, ha raya yesh, but should we infer from the Mishnah that a raya, proof of ownership, is binding? Lema, couldn't it be claimed that the shtar, mechira, the document of sale itself, is not of a serious nature? Ligluye zuze hu deboy, that the husband's intent was simply to reveal her stash of money. Now, we are nevertheless going to make this inference. So, shamis mino, should we therefore conclude from our inference, hamocher sode liishto kosa, that one who sells a field to his wife, she thereby acquires the field, velo amrinan ligluye zuze hu deboy, and we should not say that he was not serious, simply trying to reveal a stash of money. Lo, the Gemara says not to draw this conclusion, namely that the sale is serious and that we negate the idea of revealing her stash. Amo, rather, state the inference as follows. We said that a chazaka, no, implying that a raya, yes. So say as follows, ha raya yesh, namely this was the inference that one can make from the Mishnah, that a raya there is, proof there is, under what circumstances? B'shtar matona. That's if she is holding a shtar, a document, indicating that he gave her the field as a gift, involving no money transfer. If so, so then there's no basis of revealing a stash of money, because this kind of transfer of ownership doesn't involve money. However, if it was a document of sale, then, just like we said, a woman doesn't gain a chazaka on her husband's property, her document of sale also would not be of a serious, of a binding nature, because we would claim the gluye zuze. Amale Rav Nachman le Rav Huna. Lo have mor gabon beurta, you were not with us yesterday evening betchuma, in the tchum, it's a reference to you weren't with us in the base medrash. The amrinon mili malyasa, we said wonderful halachas. Omale, so Rav Huna's curiosity was aroused. My mili ma'ayasa amrisa, what wonderful halachas did you say? Before we go on to hear the wonderful halacha, we're already noticing the appearance of geometric forms, and they are triangles that appear in two directions, point up and point down. In the pre-marked, in the marking system, Shas Ozer system of Gemara learning, geometric forms indicate a series or something of a repetitive nature. When you have the form flipping up and down, as this does, that indicates some kind of give and take. And we've also provided in the Shas Ozer edition introductory notes as to what the symbols are going to be doing as they appear. In this case, under the heading Mivneh on the outside margin, you notice a triangle, and it says Ma'akav. That means the ability to keep track of the discussion. So the triangle pointing up is a reference to Rav Nachman. Lefi Rav Nachman, we've written on the side, Din Hanal Have Mili Ma'al Yasa, that the Eino Musker Batanoim, the aforementioned halacha, namely that one who writes a shtar mechira to his wife and she pays for it, it's a binding sale, that is Mili Ma'al Yasa, that's called the wonderful halacha, in so far that it's not mentioned previously in Tanaic literature. The triangle then flips over, and that's also indicated on the side, Rav Huna. Menaseh lidchois es Rav Nachman. Rav Huna attempts to deflect or counter Rav Nachman. Veloimar dehadin kvar muzgar batanoyim. That the din has already been mentioned in Tanaic literature, hence there is nothing to be excited about the wonderful halachas that they said in their Beis Medrash. And we've noted the Ode Kushya al Rav Nachman, that we'll see later an additional question on Rav Nachman, as will be indicated by another inverted triangle. So we turn back to the Gemara. We heard Rav Nachman praise the assembly of Chachomim in the Beis Medrash, that they said wonderful halachas. Rav Huna asked him, and we can pick up from that in the Gemara itself, again, Omale, my Mili Malya Samrisa, what wonderful things did you say? So we see the triangle pointing up, Rav Nachman says back, Amoicher Sada Liishto Konsa Velo Amrinan Lugluye Zuzehu Deboi, that one who sells his property to his wife, the sale is binding, and we don't say that it was simply an effort, that it was a feigned sale only to reveal her stash of cash. Omale, Rav Huna, upon hearing this, says back, Pshita, what you've said is obvious. Dal zuzi mehacha. Take out, dal is remove the money factor. V'tikni b'shtora. And let the sale be conclusive by simple virtue of the fact that there was a shtar. Nilo tnan, hasn't it been taught already in Tanaic literature, Nechosim Sheshel Machrayas, which is an expression meaning landed property, Niknin Bekesef Ubishtar Ubechazoka. Real estate is acquired through three different means, Kesef, cash payment, Shtar, a document, and the use of it. Chazoka would mean the use of the property. Is also a form of acquisition. And as the word shtar appears, one is to assume it meant even shtar, namely, regardless of cash. Let us take a look at the Rashbam. A few lines down from here, there's an asterisk. We've noted, Omar Lei, Hecha Deika Shtar Mechira, where there is a document of sale, afilu legluye zuze michvin bekabolas hamoz, even if the husband's intent was to reveal money by this action through his receipt of the money, he would thereby reveal her stash. Have kinyan gomor, still there is an act of acquisition. Didal zuze mihocha, just remove in your mind's eye the money transfer, v'tikni b'shtar mechira, and the sale would be conclusive by virtue of the document that was prepared. The gabi mos u'di'iko l'meima kabolos mos halolu lo likni, as far as the money is concerned, one can say that the cash payment would not have been the clincher of the deal. D'ligluye zuze niskavein la'atzmo kiblame, that he was trying to reveal a stash, and his taking of the money was just to pocket the money, not in exchange for the field. Avo gabi shtar ha-mechira, but as far as the presence of a document, lo shayach le-meimar hochi. This argument can't be advanced that there is something non-serious about the document. Hello, harehu kishtar matona. Ha-kol modem bo le-kamon de-konsa. The shtar stands on its own, just like in the case of a shtar matona, where the property is transferred as a gift, where there's no money payment, yet the transfer is binding because of the shtar. What benefit does the husband have in having prepared the document of sale? If the question was a question of transfer, that could have been accomplished through the money. And as far as the money is concerned, it's true, we have this whole other, this alternative story that he was simply trying to reveal a stash of cash. But how do you explain his having prepared the shtar? Elavare gomar v'akni lo. He certainly concluded to desire the sale. V'ho leko lameimar de'i lo kosav lo shtar lo havi yahavo zuzi l'gluye zuzi niskavin gam b'ksivas shtar. And you cannot say all of that. Notice we have this in singular quotation marks, these two lines of the Rashbam, indicating this whole idea. Do not say that had he not prepared the shtar, so she wouldn't have given the money, and even the shtar is part of the feigned sale. Why? Why not say that? The chol kach lo mastikin ish adaite. People are not that planned out. They're not that cunning to suspect that the woman would not have given the money unless she also received a shtar. So, in succinct terms, Rav Huna is saying that the idea that the person, man, who sells a piece of property to his wife and uses a shtar in the transfer, of course it's a serious sale. And that's already borne out in the Mishnah that's cited here. We should have noted that the information you see in a frame in the text, that indicates a Tanaic source. And we also had dashed underlined the word shtar, indicating that the shtar is itself a means of transfer. Amale. So as the Gemara goes on, you see the triangles pointing up. This is Rav Nachman responding. Rav Nachman is about to say that the source that we just saw, in which the term shtar was featured, that the shtar is a clincher of a deal, that is only so far as a gift of land, but not in sale of land. Sale of land through a shtar is insufficient. There has to be money payment as well. Omar le, v'lav itmar alo Omar Shmuel, wasn't it stated concerning the Tanaic source? It was stated by Shmuel, lo shanu ela b'shtar matona, avol b'shtar mecher lo kono ad shiitein lo domeha, that a document is sufficient on its own as a means of transfer, that's if it's a gift. However, if it's a sale, the shtar would not be able to effect a sale unless there's money payment. So, the Mishnah that's cited does not cover the halacha that Rav Nachman and his colleagues said. Their halacha was that a man who sells property to his wife, the sale is a good sale. And we don't say that he was simply trying to reveal a cash stash. However, Rav Huna responds. The response involves an attack on Shmuel's comment. Shmuel's comment had been the basis for Rav Nachman's defense of his chiddush. But if we knock out Shmuel's halacha, then Rav Nachman loses his point of defense. the lav moisiv Rav Hamnuna, but didn't Rav Hamnuna ask on Shmuel's teaching? We have the following Tanaic source, as you can see indicated by the frame. Bishtar ketzad. How is a shtar to be prepared? Kosav lo al haniyor al acheres. The person wrote on a piece of paper or on a piece of earthenware. Afapish ein boishov epruta. Even though the item on which the following was written itself has no intrinsic value. And what does he write? Sodi mechura loch, or Sodi nesuna loch. That would be the text of that which was written on this piece of paper or earthenware. Harezu mechura unesuna. It's an effective transfer, either an effective sale or an effective gift. What do we see from here? We see that a shtar is, in and of itself, a successful means of transferring things. So if that's the case, so it's obvious that if a person sells a piece of property to his wife with a shtar, she becomes the owner of it. This has been Rav Huna's claim all along. However, you can see from the triangle now pointing up, Rav Nachman responds. Talav hu moisiv law, v'hu mefarek law. But hasn't Rav Hamnuna himself, who raised the question on Shmuel, also provided an answer? The Tanaic source that we had just seen, which would have been an attack on Shmuel, is really a source stated under very limited circumstances, as is explained. The mocher sodehu mipnei ra'asa. It's a case of a field of very poor quality. In such a case, it is true a shtar would be able to clinch the deal. In other words, the seller of a very poor piece of property is very happy to get rid of it. Pay me later, he'll say. He's so happy to conclude the deal, just a shtar alone will be enough. However, with other karkos of good quality, the shtar itself won't be enough if it's a shtar of a sale, until there is money payment. And that's in accordance with Shmuel's teaching. If that be the case, then Rav Nachman's teaching remains mili me'al yasa. Namely, what Rav Huna originally claimed, that a shtar works as a means of transfer, as appears in a Tanaic source, Shmuel qualified that and said that shtar is only a shtar matona, but in a shtar mecher, you have to have money payment. If that be the case, Rav Nachman's din stands on its own, and Rav Huna's original claim that Rav Nachman's teaching was pshita, because Rav Huna claimed remove the money factor and the shtar alone works, that's not true anymore. Going on in the Gemara, V'Rav Ashi Omar, the geometric form that appears around Rav Ashi we will deal with a little bit later. However, we do take note of the number 2 that's circled above Rav Ashi. This is a second answer to a point that had been raised above, where you notice a number 1 had been circled. Where the one appeared in the Gemara, it was an attempt, and it was an answer as far as the difficulty that had been posed by the Tanaic source that was framed and beginning with the words Bishtar Ketzad. So the one was the first answer or explanation as to why that source does not present a problem. The number two does the same thing. So we will read the Gemara and also note how the Rashbam is sensitive to this issue of structure when the Rashbam points out in his commentary that he says va'ata kafto da'ach braiso da'vikashi l'shmuel koi u'borav ashi lomar da'ach braiso lo bishtar mecher airi klal ela bishtar matona. What did we just say? That the source that we thought in the question stage where there had been an inverted triangle, that a shtar mecher works on its own, we saw answer number one, and that was that it was a shtar mecher involving a poor quality field, only then does it work on its own. Rav Ashi says the shtar mecher is not really a shtar mecher at all, but rather it's a shtar matona. A shtar matona will work on its own, but a shtar mecher, you'll need to have money payment along with it, in accordance with Shmuel's teaching from before. Let's see this inside. Rav Ashi Omar, b'matona bikesh litna lo, the braisa that had the expression b'matona with a dashed underline, that was talking about a document of a gift of land as recorded in a document. V'loma kosav loy v'loshon mecher. So why, if it's a gift, does the text say in the shtar sodi mechura loch? Why use the term mecher, which indicates sale? Answer: kedei liyapois koichoi, to instill in the gift increased strength. Generally speaking, a person who receives a gift, if for some reason a previous creditor of the gift giver comes and takes away the land because he had a prior lien on the property, the receiver of the land doesn't get compensation. He got it as a gift. However, if the receiver of the land received the gift of land, the Loshon Mecher, with a language of sale in his gift, that enables him to go back to the gift giver and say, hey, the land you gave me was taken away by your creditor. I want compensation. I want like another gift. That's what's accomplished by the Loshon Mecher. That's what Kidei Liapos Kocho means. Before we go on, the new symbol, the bow tie that we see here, has a specific role. And we'll take a look at the side of the Gemara where we have our introductory notes under the Mivneh heading. Simun zeh miyuad litzor kesher ima Gemara b'amud beis. This is designed to create an association with the Gemara that will appear on the next Omid. Al shnei memros halolu mofia oisoi kushya. On these two comments, we have Rav Ashi over here, and we have the comment made by Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Avo on Omid Beis. Following their comments, we will witness the same question raised, the same flow of Gemara ensues afterwards. And this structural sensitivity is something that one will find noted in the Rashbam himself on Omid Beis, four lines from the top. We've said on previous occasions that the marking system is something that simply accentuates that which already has been noted by Rishonim as you go along. So the markings in and of themselves do not present anything by way of a chidush, but rather bring out that which has been a part of Gemara learning for centuries. As we go on in the Gemara at hand, however, we will also take a note of the tat nosei that we had written on the outside margin, the subcategory heading. Mosai toifes ha dekotoni deshtar mecher beli matan mois koine bekarka. Under what circumstances can it be said that a document of sale is binding even without money payment? Namely, Shmuel's original halacha was that document of sales work only if money payment accompanies them. However, when can it be said that a document of sale will work without money payment? So we've noted here, number one, and this is a point we've seen already, Mocher Sode B'nei Ra'asa. A person who was selling a field of very poor quality, he'll be happy to get rid of the field with the transfer of the shtar alone. Pay me later, as we said before. Point number two, or example number two, ha dekotoni shtar mecher, that which we saw in the Tanaic source that a shtar mecher works, hainu bimatona, im yipui koach. That's really a reference to a gift of land, and the lashon of mecher was simply to add increased power to it. It's important for us to review the original Rav Nachman Din. You notice above on the page we had him circled. He had introduced the din which was also dashed underlined. Notice how the markings make the different points very accessible. So we can quickly review. His halacha was that a man who sells a piece of property to his wife, the sale is effective, and we don't say that it was a feigned sale only to reveal a stash of cash. At this point in the Gemara, you notice the inverted triangle. That indicates we're going to be once again asking on Rav Nachman. Meisvei. We encounter a Tanaic source, as is indicated by the frame. Lova, one, min ha'eved, v'shichro. A person allegedly borrowed money from his slave, and wrote a shtar halva, namely a document indicating I owe you money, master owns slave money, the shibed nechasav, and also binds his properties to that loan. So on the surface it would appear you've got a master borrowing money and binding his properties to his eved. Number two, min ha'isha, namely lova, min ha'isha. You noticed after the word lova at the beginning of the source it was a colon, because the expression lova goes on this too, namely lova min ha'isha begersha. He had borrowed money from his wife and then divorced her. Ein lohen olav klum. They have no claim on him, nor the eved, nor the woman. They have no claim against the previous Baal. My time. Well, why is it that there's no claim? Lav mishum diamrinon ligluye zuzi hu devoi. Isn't it so that the man wasn't serious in binding his properties to these people? He was simply trying to reveal a stash of cash. So he feigned this need for a loan. What do we see from this? That people are motivated to reveal stashes of cash. This runs counter to Rav Nachman's claim above in the dashed underlined section less than halfway down the page, where he had said, we don't say, lo aminon legluye zuzehu deboi. Here you see, yes, legluye zuzehu deboi. Gemara answers, shiny hosom, the case involving a loan is different and shouldn't be raised as a question on Rav Nachman's teaching. The lo nichole leshavya nafshe eved loive leish malve. In the case of a loan, of course the person was feigning the loan. It was a fake need for a loan. A person doesn't have any motivation to become a borrower. In other words, if we can explain away his behavior other than being a borrower, so you can rest assured he wasn't trying to borrow money. The pasuk that's cited here indicates that a person who borrows money becomes enslaved to the lender of the money. That idea is restricted to a loan, a halva. However, in the case of a sale with a shtar, that's a shtar gomur. It's a full-fledged document, and you can rest assured, as Rav Nachman said, that the sale is a binding sale. Notice the topic heading on the side of the Gemara, no say. Hamocher sode leishto, machloikis amoiroyim le'orech amud beis im habal ochel peros. Man who sold field to his wife. We will see a machlokes amoroyim, whether the husband can consume the peros of the field that he sold to her. Does he have fruit rights? Sholach Rav Huna Bar Ovin, he sent to the Talmidei Beis HaMedrash, the students of the Beis Medrash, HaMocher Sode LeIshto Konsa Ubal Ochel Peros. Bram, however, Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Avo, V'chol Gedolei Hador Omru, V'matona Bikesh Litno La. The husband's intention was to give her the property as a gift. V'loma Kosav La L'shul Mecher. So why is it that it appears that it was done with the language, with the text of a sale? Kedei liyapois es koicho, so as to increase her power, her collection power. The main point is seen by what we've written in between the lines, which is drawn from the Rashbam commentary, and that is that the husband who gave the property to his wife is not to continue eating the peros. And we've not only written that in between the lines, but we've also dashed, underlined it, so that you can contrast it with what was stated on the top line, that the Baal is ochel peros. These Rabbanan hold lo yochal peros. The Gemara raises a question from a Tanaic source, Mesve, Lova, Minho Eved, Vishichero. Person wrote a document indicating, I owe you money, a loan document, and he bound his property to pay off the loan, borrowing from an Eved, ostensibly. Minho Isha, Vegersha, or he borrowed money from his wife and divorced her. Similar to the case of the Eved, where he had borrowed money from the Eved and sent him free. Ein lohen olav klum. They have no claim on him, on the original Baal. Mai taima, lav mishum de'aminan, ligluye zuzi hu debo. That the whole loan and the writing of the document was a feigned deal. Namely, the whole purpose was to reveal a stash of cash. There was no intention of binding the property to these people. It wasn't a real loan. Any money they had extended to him was part of his property anyway. Therefore, we see here that the loan transaction was a feigned thing only to reveal a stash of cash. The same thing with the case of one who sold property to his wife. It wasn't a serious sale. The Gemara answers, you can't ask from the case of the loan. Shiny hosam, the lo mashvi inish eved loive liish malve. A person wouldn't allow himself to become a borrower and hence become enslaved to the lender. That's only so far as the case of a loan. But in the case of a sale, the sale may very well be, is a serious sale. We now encounter a new geometric form, as far as our Gemara is concerned, the diamond. And we'll glance at the heading on the side, the Nosei Mivneh. The diamond are Deos Chokos B'mochar Sode L'ishto Haim Habal Ochel Peros. One who sells property to his land, does the husband consume the fruits? Omar Rav. Rav will be contrasted with Rabbi Elozer in another two lines. Hamocher sode liishto konsa v'abal ochel peros. Bimatona, if he gives the field to his wife as a gift, as opposed to mecher, as opposed to a sale, konsa, she acquires the property, v'ein habal ochel peros. The Rebbe Elozer Omar, echod zeh, v'echod zeh, whether it be a case of a sale or a gift, konsa, v'ein habal ochel peros. Namely, even in the case of a sale, the baal does not continue eating the peros. Ovad Rav Chisda Uvda Kerebi Elozer. Rav Chisda paskined, he carried out a legal ruling like Rav Elozer's teaching. Namely, the Baal would not be Oichel Peros. Omrule Rabon Ukva V'Rabon Nechemya B'nei Binsei de Rav Chisda L'Rav Chisda. Namely, Rav Chisda's grandchildren, Rav Ukva and Rav Nechemya, asked him, Shovik Mor Rav Ravi V'Ovid Kizutri. How did Rav Chisda paskin? He paskin like Rav Elozer. So they asked him, did you abandon Shovik, to abandon the great men, namely Rav, a greater scholar, a greater sage, than Reb Elozer and the Ovid Kizutri, and do like the smaller ones. Omale, Reb Chisda answers, Ano nami kiravravi avdi. Believe me that my ruling was also in accordance with Ravravi of great men. The Chiosa Rovin, Omar Reb Yochanan, Echod zeh v'echod zeh. Whether it be a sale or a gift, konsa v'ein habal ochel peros. Notice some of the markings. We've squiggle underlined Rav Yochanan to create a connection between him and Rav Chisda. Namely, Rav Chisda's psak, Rav Chisda's ruling, was based not only on Rav Elozer, but primarily on Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan being considered also a Ravravi, a great man, a colleague of Rav. There's quite a bit more to say on the Rav Rabbi Yochanan relationship and greatness, etc. We could cite a couple of incidents in Maseches Chulin to bring this out, but we won't do that at this point. We are always hopeful that the students of the Daf Yomi of the Gemara marking system will learn all of the Shas. Continuing in the Gemara, Omar Rava Hilchasa Hamoicher Sode Liishtoi Lo Konsa. She doesn't acquire it. Vehabal Ochel Peros. Very interesting expression that we say on the one hand she doesn't acquire it. On the other hand, we say that the Baal consumes the fruits. That phrase in and of itself would lead one to think that she did acquire it. However, the Baal continues to have a right to the fruits. This will have to be resolved a little bit later. Number two, Bimatana, person who transferred property to his wife through a matana, konsa, v'ein habal ochel peros. This type of ruling we've seen above as well. The Gemara asks, regarding psak number one, ruling number one of Rava, the Gemara asks very briefly in one word, tarti. Tarti means two, namely two points that seem to contradict each other. And we'll go over that. Rava said that in the case of Mocher Sonalishto, lo konsa. That was point one. And then he said, the Baal Zochel Peros, that expression, is mashma, indicates to us that she does acquire, she acquires the goof akarka, and the Baal continues to have fruit rights. So how are we to explain Rava Halocha 1? Lo kashya. Kan b'mo'is t'munin. Kan b'mo'is she'ein t'munin. T'munin means hidden. If the woman pulled out hidden money, then we will say lo konsa, that there's no acquisition, and that this whole design was to reveal those hidden funds. However, the mos she'ein t'munin, if they were monies that were known to the husband, they were obvious monies, then we will say that, yes, konsa, she does acquire the guf akarka, the principle of the land. However, the husband continues eating the fruits. So the two points of Rava, number one, really we're referring to two separate circumstances. The Omar Rav Yehuda, mois temunin lo konsa. If they were hidden funds, then she doesn't acquire the land. The whole thing was a feigned sale just to reveal the hidden funds. Mois she'enon temunin, then we don't have the issue of Ligluye Zuzeh, they were not hidden. Konsa, she does acquire the land. And the Baal is Ochel Peros. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.